too busy trying to be the cool kid, yucking it up with TV stars and Hollywood celebrities. And when our ambassador and three other Americans were killed in a terrorist attack in Libya, Obama refused to cancel his fundraising party in Las Vegas. It's time to retire the Beer Summit Spring Break presidency. It's time to put the adults back in charge of America.
You know, I have let our main contributors to the show know that LinkedIn is having some sort of problems for the past several days, and I am not able to gain access to my group, the Political Conservative Objective. And actually, I can't even log on to the LinkedIn, so hopefully they'll have it fixed soon. So, but worse still is that I had posted in the Political Conservative Objective an outline to get contribution for today's show. Now, and I was receiving some great commentary, which I will not be able to review on this show today due to the fact that for many days I've not been able to get on there. So here we go with just a conservative common sense objective. Now, Barack Obama's failed agenda is wreaking havoc on this economy, and we've all visited this subject matter for several times. But I want to reiterate that I fear for the future that we are handing to our children. So I want to begin this show with sometimes the best defense is a good offense. So I'm going after proof of at least some of the Obama lies. Now, Obama frequently uses Abe Lincoln's name in his speeches. And I say to Obama, I know Abe Lincoln from my studies of history, and you ain't Abe Lincoln. Obama has made numerous attempts to falsify Abe Lincoln's quotes, and you may recognize some. So why doesn't Obama use the famous Lincoln quote in the place of the, in the place of such things as these? You cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift. You cannot lift the wage earner up by pulling the wage payer down. You cannot further the brotherhood of man by inciting class hatred. You cannot build character and courage by taking away people's initiative and independence. You cannot help people permanently by doing for them what they and could and should do for themselves. Now, that's Abe Lincoln. Now, I want to bring in my co-host, Spencer Lehman. Spence, come in with your comments, please.
Morning, David, and thank you. Actually, what I'd like to touch on today, because it has to do with what you were just talking about regarding the economy, regarding the liberal, the Democrats' tendency to want to use euphemisms in order to get their points across. And I think that that makes sense, especially if we use that euphemism to be factual in what we're saying. So for an example, as you were just talking about, when we hear the Democrats, when we hear Obama referring to the top 2%, they refer to the top 2% as being the rich. In reality, the top 2% are the top contributors to our tax revenue. It's the top 2% that pay the most taxes. It's the top 2% that help the economy run. We keep it going. We keep driving it. And I think that we do need to start using words that actually represent what the facts are. And that's the kind of thing that I'm referring to. So it's very important, especially now that the economy is doing poorly. We're not seeing the growth that we need. People are losing their jobs continuously. When Obamacare blows up, which it's going to do very shortly, we're going to start seeing some of the serious ramifications of the tax components to Obamacare, it's going to become even more difficult for this country to grow. So we need to really concentrate in order to take the country back and help get it healthy. We need to concentrate on coming up with the kinds of sound bites, the kinds of euphemisms that factually explain where we are so that the average public can understand what we're talking about. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to whoever wants to add to that comment.
Ron, come on in and give a 2 cents worth here.
Yeah, you've hit on something I believe I was talking about a couple weeks ago, and that is that we've got to, the conservative side of the aisle needs to come up with, and it hasn't been Spencer's idea of contribute as opposed to any other word is great, but I think, you know, the entire message that conservatives need to come forward with is something that is easy to understand, palpable, everybody, you know, can get it under their hat, and most importantly, really is an attraction to those who have previously not been attracted to our message. And I'm not sure we have that yet. And I'm not sure how to do it. If I was, I'd probably be a heck of a lot richer than I am, which I'm not. But I think that, once again, the message needs to be clear. First of all, it needs to be developed. Secondly, it needs to be clear because those that are in the 48% or 47, whatever the heck the percentage is, 98%, just don't have a clue, you know, how they can even remotely play with those that are in the 2%. Let me restate that. Many of them don't have a clue. The balance of them don't wish to know. And it's Abraham Lincoln's quote, as I recall it, is the role of government is to do for a community of people what they cannot do by their own devices. And unfortunately, they've changed that to cannot do or won't do. And the won't do is killing us. So that's my 2 cents. And I think, once again, the message has to be clear, got to be developed, and it has to be something that attracts and not puts them off.
You know, this is Maurice Bonamigo calling from Chicago. Good morning, everybody, and I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas. And technically, we still are in the Christmas season until January 13th, so continue celebrating. But anyway, what you just touched upon is, you know, is basically keeping it simple. You know, right now I'm working on a big project for Colombia, the country of Colombia, and what it is basically is doing what the conservatives need to start taking over. And you have to go out and you have to start reaching out into smaller communities and really educating people of what a conservative is. Once people understand the values of a conservative, they start to figure out, well, maybe I really am a conservative. And I have transformed, you know, several people here in, you know, Obama land here in Chicago to really understand what a true conservative is. The key thing is that you want to keep it simple. All your talking points have to be simple, and they have to resonate to the people that you're speaking to. One of the best books everybody should read here is, it's an old book, I think it was published in 1958, I think, and it's republished now, you can get it on Amazon, is Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater. It's 90 pages, it's a paperback book, and it explains everything what a true conservative is and the values of what conservative is. When people think about conservative, right away they think, okay, well, everybody's anti-gay marriage, okay, number one. The second thing is, well, they're anti-abortion, number two, okay, they're anti-women's rights. That's totally false. We are not against a lot of that stuff. You know, yes, in the Republican platform, yes, you know, it is, you know, right to life. And that may be fair. And I'm a devout Catholic, so I believe in right to life. But that being said, who always brings up the issue of abortion and the fear amongst them about taking away, you know, the rights of women? It's never the conservatives that bring that up. The conservatives leave that alone. It is always the Democrats. They go on fear, and that's what they preach. to the minorities of this country and middle class America, and it's all indoctrinated even in school from kindergarten up when these kids go to school. So therefore, it is us to be responsible to get out there into smaller groups and start educating people. And you know, the best way to start doing it is go to the black churches, because they truly are conservative. They don't realize it. And you explain to them, look, this is what the government is saying, that they're better for you. And all the government is saying to these underprivileged people, it doesn't matter if they're black, white, or Hispanic, is that you're too stupid to get ahead on your own. You need us to help to get you ahead. Well, these people have been voting this way for the past 40 years, and they're still bitching about the same thing that they've been bitching about for the past 40 years, and nothing's changed. So why do you continue doing the same thing? If you look at our way and how we go about doing things and what conservative values are that we believe in handing up but not hands out, you will go further in life. And that is the true American dream.
Yeah. You know, we've got some great contributors today, and I want to get everybody in here. So, Morris, come in, sir.
Yeah, I just did.
I'd like to touch on what was just been talked about. I think I would go along that a lot of what is put out by the mainstream media is being more in causes as opposed to the issues. And I think when they do that, they're splitting up and saying, what is the Democrat response? What is the Republican response? Instead of, what is the response that's best for the people? What is the people's response, which is more important, really, than the Democrat response or the Republican response, liberal or conservative? If you go back to 1820, and I bring this up because Obama beat around that bush here about a month ago, when he's saying, well, we all agree on extending some tax cuts, so let's go ahead and pass that. Well, he wanted to take that off the plate so that the harder issues could be done later when the bargaining chip was gone. What Henry Clay did in 1820 and 1850 was, no omnibus bill works. It becomes a disaster, just like it was a year and a half ago. What you got to do, you got to split it up into the different parts. Everybody understands that there's no superfluous garbage added to these parts, and everybody gets to vote for and against the parts that they like and dislike, and it all goes through usually, because you can get different coalitions of moderates, Democrats, moderate Republicans, far right and far left, and that everybody can get this put together, not as a cause, not as a Democrat or Republican or libertarian issue, but as an issue that affects everybody. And that way, everybody wins, because you get to vote for and against what you want to vote for and against. That's the old pre-party days, of course, in 1820. By 1850, it was a little tougher because of the entrenched parties that we had already started seeing. But I think the best way to attack is not to tell, you know, certainly there are those moderate Democrats that are leaning, you know, will vote Democrat because they're not as hard socially as those Republicans are, but they're willing to accept the socialism and progressivism of Democrats because the social issues and stances of the Republicans they can't take. So, and you can switch that around to the Republicans and get the same opposites. So you're dealing with what's your party instead of what's your issue, not your cause, but your issue. Exactly. I think we need to steer away from the party and steer back to the people.
I gotcha. Great synopsis and great outline. Al, come in here.
Yeah, I think that we need to understand our history a little bit better than we do in this country. Lincoln was mentioned just a moment ago as a great leader. To me, nothing more than a butcher. He went ahead and he killed 600,000 Americans illegally. The 5 million Americans died from opportunistic diseases. He didn't give a damn about slavery. He only cared about preservation of the Union. So that's my conclusion about it. Because slavery was obsolete anyway. It was going to go away anyway. Or the ranting and ravings, for example, we heard over the past week or so from Piers Morgan about gun control. And now people want to toss him out of the country because he's exercising his free speech. But he won't listen to other people's free speech. For example, I posted that Hitler had supported extreme gun control, 50 million people died. Did you get a response to that? No. Because it's a way of looking at it in a more of a clear light than the prism in which we look through our history now. So I think we've got to get to the point where people actually listen to what our actual history is, and we need to understand our history a whole lot better than we do right now. And I think there's a lot of confusion about what this nation is about, and we need to, I think, define terms as to what a republic is, what democracy is, what exactly it is that we're trying to accomplish as a nation. And then, you know, instead of, you know, balling things into the word being a Democrat or being a Republican or being a conservative, I think we need to be very, very granular about the way we think about things.
Absolutely.
That's my two cents.
Yeah. Gus, come in here and give us your two cents worth.
Yeah.
Gus?
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, I've been listening intently to all these discussions the last several weeks, and there seems to be a common thread, basically education. The general public has to be better educated. The message has to get across more easily and readily understandable to them. I don't know what it is, but I think it's a lot of over-empowering by the lamestream media, as you want to call it. People are too much subjected to one kind of message. They're not getting the full parameter, the full breadth of the situation. Just case in point, like with this fiscal cliff issue, it seems like no matter what the Republicans or anybody else, conservative point of view, try to instill in the discussion on the resolution to the fiscal cliff, it doesn't really get resonated. Whereas Barack Obama and everybody on the left or the Democratic Party, their message all the time seems to control the narrative. And I kind of find that troubling. I don't know why it's like that. I know the media is basically tilted to the liberal left-wing side of things, but without that kind of, let's put it like in a better level playing field, it's going to be hard to get progress in a way to get some kind of mutual understanding on common ideals so that, you know, problems can get resolved. And I just see that it's so troubling with this fiscal cliff situation now. And it seems like the politicians just don't give a damn. Well, they didn't give a damn, I guess, for a long time anyways. But it's very disheartening to see where something so crucial as the fiscal cliff, this financial burden with the debt, and just because of staunch political views, the one that seems to be controlling the strings of power, is, you know, going to set the country on a path that maybe half or even more than half the population disagree with. And that's kind of troubling. And
which is the actual link to this show, which we're trying to get at on a hour-by-hour basis when we are delivering here, which is we all need to communicate, and how we're going to communicate means a lot, but us not communicating and not being able to communicate the rough issues and the tough issues is simply destroying the country. Now, there's just no two ways about it. We have to figure out ways of communicating, and I brought you back in, Spence. Please, are you through coughing?
I think so, at least for the moment. One of the things, by the way, Maurice, I would really appreciate it if you could let me know. I'd like to get your full name. I know we're connected, but I can't find my record on you, and right now cannot get into our group on LinkedIn, and I'd like to be able to connect. So
Maurice,
if you could hang on after the show, I'd like to talk with you.
All right.
Okay. One of the things that I caught, and I caught it from what Maurice was saying and from what Al was saying, from what virtually everybody has been saying, And that is the need for us to define what a conservative really is, because some of us are more moderate, but we're still conservatives, and make sure that the public understands exactly what we are, who we are, what a conservative is, that those of us who are conservatives, particularly fiscal conservatives and strong conservatives regarding our foreign policy issues and so forth, may not be getting into causes as much as we are into real serious issues like the economy. Morris made some extremely good comments about that. And that's the tendency of the left to really concentrate on causes, social causes, the Occupy Everywhere group, anything that seems to get people's attention, as opposed to what are the real issues that we're dealing with? How are we going to keep the country from deteriorating even more than it is now when we have Obamacare start to blow up, which it will in just within the next few months and over the next 2 years? It's going to have devastating consequences on the economy because of all of the taxes that are going to start to hit people throughout the country on Obamacare, and nobody knows those taxes are coming. So we have a lot of tax increases due that were never discussed, never have been discussed with regard to the need to raise taxes on people who are in the top 2%. And I think that these are critical issues that we need to be communicating, and communicating well to the public so that they understand what we're talking about. So communication is almost everything that we need to be doing in order to be taking control and get the health of this country moving again.
Absolutely. You can't be hollering at people saying this is wrong and this is wrong and this is wrong without saying here's the reason and here's
precisely
what the problem is.
Not only that, but we have to not only here's the reason, but we have to be able to explain what the solutions are, how we can handle this without having to get into a you're wrong and I'm right kind of thing. David, you're absolutely correct.
Sure.
This is Maurice. But the interesting thing is, it's not a question of you're wrong, you're right. The question is point counterpoint. This is the reality of this, and we're talking about how are we going to reach out to people when the media is so left. Well, yes, the media is always left, with the exception of Fox News, for the most part. But what you can do is, number one, you can start. Everybody has an obligation to start writing into blogs, to start writing into newspaper editors, and so on and so forth. Get your message out. You can do it in a respectful way and say, okay, look, here's the other flip side to this: is that people do not realize that. That's how you start communicating with people. And you also have to start communicating with people. Like I say, go into communities. Start with the churches or what have you. Different alliance clubs and such like that, and discuss with what is happening. There's tons and millions of different ways that you can go out and communicate and get your point out. It is not argumentative by any means, and that's not the purpose of that. The purpose is getting the message out. In terms of what is a true conservative, most people don't know what a true conservative is. It's fashionable to say, well, I'm a conservative today. Well, no, you're not conservative. You're radical liberals is what you are. But if you go back to, like I said, the premise, get that book, The Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater. That is 90 pages in paperwork. That is clearly defined of what a true conservative is. There's not much difference between a libertarian and a conservative, but a true conservative, it is clearly defined in that. And that's the message that you have to start reaching out to people.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. As I've been listening, I picked up several things. I don't know whether it was Maurice or Al or whomever, but the cause and effect situation. And that is, I wonder if anyone has ever published or made clear what is going to happen if this so-called fiscal cliff is experienced. What is going to happen to those people on the poor side of the equation? In other words, just bullet points. This is going to happen. 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 I believe that, one thing we can say about the Democrats, they're really good at getting their message across. Granted, they've got a left-leaning media that helps them tremendously, but, they've learned how to make the complex simple. And thus, they've been able to do that, however. But I really think that if some of us should, you know, look at what the fiscal cliff really means, specifically for the folks that are not as fortunate. And then ask the question, this is what's going to happen as of January 1st. Bing, 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 bing. Mm-hmm. And then say, do you want this to happen?
Exactly. No, that's a good synopsis. And if we could just get those venues that you just got to mentioning, that would be, you know, right on. And, of course, Maurice pointed a great many of those out. And how we're going to be able to do that, like you just got to saying, the left has really sunk us with their ability to do that. And that is absolutely phenomenal. We need to learn from that. You know, there's nothing wrong with people who have the program. So if they have the program and it worked against us, why can't we learn from that? How come we can't do some of the same things? We were caught off guard. I know there's a lot of people who can prove that there were dead people voting for him and there were folks being trucked from the one side of the state to the other, that type of thing. But really, there is a huge amount that we can learn from the folks, and how to communicate is one of those. And we constantly talk about it. So any of you want to jump in here, just jump in.
Sure. Okay. I'd like to jump in, if you would. This is Al Jordan. First of all, we are reasonable people on this phone call. Most of the left are not reasonable people. There's a presumption in that community that there's always going to be some rich guy out there to pay the freight for somebody. And so they'll make up programs that say that it's to the truth. They'll provide no facts, never argue from facts, but argue from ignorance. And people who think they're going to get something for free will always buy into it. This is the reason that Europe is going down the chute, because they're manufacturing and productivity is going down to the point where it can't match with the social network. And so, therefore, instead of trying to fix it, you know, from a productivity point of view, they riot in the streets. I think that if we're going to do anything, maybe we've got to be a little bit more ignorant. Maybe what we say is certain things, and in a way, make them a smarter soundbite, but we can't be drafted into the ignorance of the left, because in fact, they will continue to do what they're doing and beat us every single time because they don't want to do what it takes. I mean, what kind of society do we have when you go ahead and punish the productive part of our society? You make over $1 million, make more than $250,000, whatever it might be, whatever the number is, and you're going to punish that person? How is that productive? Well, you can't seem to, none of us can seem to be able to get that across.
Exactly.
We can work 1,000 hours a week, kidding, but we can't seem to get the message across. In order to make what we're trying to do, you know, palatable, we've got to work to do it. We seem unable to get that message across.
You know, you made mention of Abe Lincoln not being the true character that everybody has him bloused up to be, but he made some very good comments. You cannot help the poor by destroying the rich. You cannot strengthen the weak by weakening the strong. You cannot bring about prosperity by discouraging thrift, and you cannot lift the wage earner up by pulling the wage payer down. I mean, all of those things are synonymous to everything that you just got through saying. And one of the things that you brought out there that actually fed my curiosity was you used the word, you know, to perhaps we should become a little more stupid or ignorant when we make a comment. But one of the things that stems is the fact that, well, maybe we're trying to talk above people, so let's try to talk on a more even keel. The reason why I say that is, how many times have you heard people being interviewed who have no idea what the events of the world or the nation are? And that's when I came back to a statement several shows ago. Is it a conflict of interest? And I want to ask everybody on this show, am I being fair or unfair? Is it a conflict of interest to allow somebody to vote who is getting food stamps, housing subsidies. We're talking about entitlements, and I want to make absolutely certain people understand that what you work for is not an entitlement. That is Social Security, Medicare, the unemployment, you know, that type of thing. What you work for is not an entitlement. But for the other entitlements, don't you think they will be voting for the person who gives them the most of that? Somebody come in.
God, like, am I on?
Go ahead.
David?
Yeah, go
am
ahead.
Am I on?
You going?
Yeah, go ahead, Morris.
I want to jump in. I think there's certainly merits about not voting if you're getting a check. That goes really back to, you know, the founding of the country when if you owned property, then you had a stake in the government. You know, if you're getting a check from the government, you don't have a stake in the government. And that would, you know, that tends to sensationalize, which is what the Democrats and the left tend to do with everything. They sensationalize so that it puts us in a crisis mode. You know, the fiscal cliff. Look at what the bill written a year and a half ago that saved us from the fiscal cliff calls for Congress to come up with a way to cut $1.2 trillion out of the deficit in 10 years. That's $120 billion a year. $120 billion out of a $3.2 trillion budget is a piece of crap. You can do that, and so easy. It is not this big of a deal. We can cut $60 billion out of defense, and we can cut $70 billion out of the liberal side, the social side, and we aren't going to see it. Nobody's going to see it. Let's don't kid ourselves. They're just sensationalizing over everything. And they're not looking at the issue. They're looking at the sensation, the crisis. And if we can get people to look simply at the issue, use some common sense. It doesn't take, you know, common sense comes along without education. I know a lot of people that are 180 IQ that have zero common sense, and they can't make it in the world because without common sense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that we need to dumb down. We need to expect people to use their common sense. And
yep, Morris, I'd like to.
Well, the problem is I call it uncommon sense because if it was so common, more people would have it. You know, that's what you have to deal with. But the issue is right here is that you're never going to, you know, in theory, I agree with what you're saying that, you know, those that receive benefits from the government shouldn't be allowed to vote or what have you. Yeah, in theory, that is correct. But the reality is you're never going to change that either. You know, that's just not going to happen. You're going to have a whole new revolution. And I can guarantee you with that kind of, you know, rhetoric, you're going to have the liberals coming out, and you're going to even lose even more. It's the same thing.
But I hate the fact that you use the word rhetoric. Those are facts. That's not rhetoric.
Well, it is. But once you start presenting that to the public media, it's going to turn into rhetoric. That's exactly
right.
You know, you're right. It is a fact, unmistakably. But I can guarantee you how the left spins and twists things around, it will be interpreted as rhetoric.
But you know, we need that guy at the top that says, "Listen, this is fact," and continue to chastise the media who tries to spin fact in a different direction. That's what we've been lacking, and it's a lot of people have made mention that, geez, I don't think Romney even really wanted to run for president because he didn't take advantage of those issues that were purposely being blasted out there that he should have nailed. And all I'm saying is when something is fact, we shouldn't let it slip between the cracks and let the media spin it a different way.
David, I think you're making an important comment, but one of the things that we have to remember is that when we're talking about the media, we're not going to change them. They're
no,
going to keep
I'm saying
going
we should
exactly
attack
what,
them. We should attack them like they do us, yes.
Well, we also need to learn how to use them, not just attack them,
right,
but use them to our advantage.
And that's very true. You have to be able to learn. Excuse me. You also have to learn how to utilize that. And so what you have to do in terms of that is get on these radio shows, talk shows, whatever it is, and just voice your opinion. You know, people are going to hear it. Just say whatever you want to say. You know, it's
everything you're saying, Maurice, it makes perfect sense. And I think that one of the things, when we're doing that, we need to be using the correct euphemisms when we're on these public radio shows or, you know, any talk show. So, for example, we talk about not the rich. We talk about the tax contributors.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we get that point across. Maurice, would you please send me a message, private message via LinkedIn so I can connect with you?
Yeah, sure. Who is this, Spencer?
This is Spencer Lehman.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
No, I need to understand something about what's being said. Is it the position of this group that people who don't own property, for instance, shouldn't be eligible to vote?
No. And
no,
I wanted to address,
okay.
This is important because David asked a question about that. And it had to do not with, I think, property owners as much as people who are receiving entitlements. And while it's emotionally, maybe gratifying would be the right word to think that they shouldn't be able to vote, the fact is that this is America. If Romney were president and we had a lot of people who were pro-business and pro those of us who were paying the most in taxes, and we were saying everything that we wanted, we went along with everything that president wants, the case could be made that there's a conflict of interest. Whether or not there's a conflict of interest.
That's not the Constitution. Morris brought it up plainly that we wouldn't be using those kinds of deflections that you talked about, Spence, because a certain amount of successful people voted for somebody and somehow that was a conflict of interest. No, I'm talking about people who gain from the government and a particular elected official gain from them. The government pays them money. That means the government has no money. They're redistributing somebody else's taxes.
Entitlement, I think, gentlemen.
Yeah.
And David, I understand what you're saying completely, but my question is, how do we, we can't turn on and off a button that says if you're now receiving money from the government, you're on welfare. So you can't vote during that period of time, but when you go off welfare.
You know, where do you draw the line? Because as far as receiving money from the government, does that mean the Fed shouldn't be getting government contracts? Does that mean, you know, this is too muddy?
Yeah,
I don't believe that we were even in that road, Morris.
Well,
give me Morris. Morris, come in, Morris. I want you to redo the statement about the Constitution and receiving money from government. Go ahead, do that again.
What I was bringing up was that the original systems in the 18th century were generally people that had a stake in stable government for the ones that voted. That generally was landowners or people that had X amount of real assets. Today, you know, the property ownership is very wide. Assets are very wide. It can be. We're not going to talk about cutting out 70% of the voters here. We're eligible voters. There's, 230, 240 million eligible voters, of which 120 million bothered to vote. So I think we're not going to cut out anybody that normally votes. We're cutting out those that usually don't vote anyway. So I think I was trying to bring up a point that if you're interested government and you're interested in a safe society that provides the liberty that we have bought into on this social contract, then you're going to be involved and you're going to take care of those that can't take care of themselves. That's just the way it works. We're that kind of society. And I brought up the property ownership. That was the way it was done 250 years ago. And it generally works the same way now. There's property ownership now is quite a lot in the country. Assets are available for everybody that really wants to get it. Just about anybody can get a job these days. It may not be the job you want, but it's a job until you get the job you want. That's the way everybody has made it for 200 years.
Sure.
Why can't we do that today?
Yeah.
My concern, gentlemen, is that if we get into a situation of determining who can and cannot vote based on who is on the take, the entitlement take, we're going to get into muddy waters that are going to be very dangerous. And the left can use it to totally demolish us.
I'd like to, please,
other people get in with a thought on that.
It would mean that no government worker could vote because they're all in the dole.
Well, actually, no. I think you're spreading the wing too far. The government dole is not working for the government. That's just groups that is what we're calling government expansion. That takes the educated guy at the top, like a president, to say we don't need to grow government and pay, create jobs with taxpayer money. That's not growing jobs, but that does not mean the person who now lands the job is not the voter. Of course he is, but I'm talking about people who absolutely have no contribution other than the fact that they are on the dole. Now, that does not mean what you work for, the Social Security, the Medicaid, the unemployment, those types of things. You can't enter into that because someone works for a company that happened to be created by the taxpayer dollar. That was not his fault. The idea he took the job that was available and was created by a person who should not have been elected or being placed in such an office that he could expand government and create jobs on the taxpayers' back. I can't, for the life of me, imagine why we can't get the point across that even though CBO comes up with numbers and all of these groups and organizations come up and say, listen, there's hundreds of these government regulators that are regulating the same things that we're just
David, I'm going to. I want to make a very strong statement here because it really disturbs me that we have enough problems that we've got to overcome in order to get this country back. This is an issue where the lamestream media and the left will absolutely demolish us if we try to get into this kind of an arena. Well, I don't think enough of these people are voting to make a big difference to begin with, as Morris was just pointing out, who votes and who isn't. But I do know that if this is something that could be a huge emotional bashing that we could take, that the media would present, that we're trying to prevent people from voting who they will claim have a stake, whether or not they do.
Well, if we're going to cut, if the physical cliff happens January 1 and we don't come to any kind of resolution, there's going to be an $800 billion cut in the Obama's favorite, which is cutting our military. Okay? Well, that's taxpayer dollars if you wanted to look at it in those terms.
No, I understand
who,
all that.
Who in their right mind would not say that the reason we are a free country and the most powerful country, et cetera, is because of our military. Now, if he can easily want to wipe that off the globe so he can slowly reduce us to third world status, which is basically what he's trying to do, we need to come up with the, and Al said it greatly, we need to speak in terms where the average folks can understand that here's the reason that would not be good and go in and say here's the solution, just like you said, Spence. We have to get down to the talking point and not just radiate all these wonderful words and huge long paragraphs and books because they're not paying attention. Look, every time they do an interview with these folks, they don't realize what the daily events are. They're looking at the football game or the basketball game or something, but they're not paying attention. So we've got to do the good job that the left did of getting their attention with that little bitty blurb that's coming out there to you might say, harp on the issue maybe over and over that was reality. plug it
David,
in.
David, I agree. My concern is that we don't get into a situation about declaring who should or should not be able to vote as long as they are a legal citizen of the United States.
I agree.
Okay, well,
you're going to have to leave
that.
You're going to have to leave that out. I'm telling you, don't go there, because the left is going to spin this, and it's going to be worse for the conservatives or the Republicans. Leave that one completely out. The only thing is that we have to clarify, only, like you just said, if they are legal citizens, they may vote. If they're illegal, they cannot vote.
Absolutely.
Well, see, that's
end
the problem,
subject,
too.
End of subject.
The open border.
Yeah, go ahead, open border. Who is saying that?
Yeah, it's me, Gus. See, this is the thing, too. It goes beyond entitlements. You know, it's the administration that creates the environment where the people want to keep voting for the same party all the time. For example, the open borders. I call it open border because they're not stemming the tide of illegal immigration and everything else that's coming through there. And these people have a vested interest in their own personal survival. And if they have a president of the United States who says, yeah, it's all right to sneak through or just walk across the border and we'll start subsidizing some of your basic needs for a livelihood, of course they're going to vote for that guy, right? So, I mean, it's like an open book bribe that's why they got to secure the border. That's one big issue I see that's really troubling, is that open border. They're creating a whole population that's already indebted to the government that allowed them in so freely. And
Gus, no argument. I think the point that Maurice and I are trying to make is that if a person is a legal citizen of the United States, they are entitled and encouraged to vote. And if we take any other approach or try to throw any other element into this, any other component, we're opening ourselves up for a real battle. And I think it's very foolish to do that.
But the story goes deeper than that. How many of these people are probably allowed to vote?
I'm not arguing that, but our point is legal citizens.
Yeah, I know. But the government is making it difficult for you guys to keep that legal citizenship criteria only.
Okay, and you're right, and that's something that we have to address. That comes under, however, immigration reform. It doesn't come under reforming constitutional rights to be able to vote.
Well, to the point, if you, as far as the media getting hold of this kind of dialogue, and sorry, I have to say that, all one needs to look at is here a few months back where states were trying to pass and getting their courts to approve the driver's license identification or identification laws at the polls. And that was turned totally by the media into basically disenfranchising those people that didn't have an ID. And so can you imagine what this discussion would do? Oh, my goodness.
That's my whole point.
Yeah. But the idea is we can't run from the truth. We have to figure out how to explain the truth. And that was my whole basics for having a conversation with very intelligent people like we have on this group. There can't be, well, no, you can't say it, so please just disregard. We have to figure out some ways to say things. Yes, there are going to be situations where we can't bring up something that is fact, which is a person who is gaining something would certainly vote for an individual that was furnishing it. That's a great spin that the left could really get a hold of. But the other case is we have got to stop the political correctness. We've got to be able to iron out situations that the left is able to cover up by simply stating you're a racist or you're a.
You want to keep it simple? Just say whatever they do costs you money. The government's spending money on that. That means your taxes are going up. That means your job is threatened. So whatever they do, just say it costs you money in the long run or in the short run.
Well,
can I break in for a second?
What's that? Go ahead.
I just want to break in for a second. We've been talking about the fiscal cliff. We also know that the Fed is buying $45 billion a month in derivatives from the banks that are going to head south. We also know the majority of our federal debt that you and I allegedly owe belongs to the government itself. So instead of worrying about the federal deficit, just have the Federal Reserve cut a check for $16 trillion, put it in the bank as a non-performing asset, end the discussion. That's it.
Well, yeah, actually, that is not an answer in my view for this reason. One of the things that would have sunk this country very, very quickly is to let Obama have his right to raise the debt ceiling on his will. And that, thank God, was left aside. So why would we want to reduce the money and bring our dollar back away from the international currency by, again, increasing by buying the debt? They've not cut any of the spending, so we just create another one again. That's illogical and absolutely not performable. We have to get people to understand that every time they spend money, it's going to cost you money. How's it going to cost you? If you don't pay any taxes at all, you do pay taxes. If you go out and you buy something at a store, and it had to go up because the guy who was contributing the most and making the jobs and selling the product had to go up on the product, because what is a tax? A tax is overhead. We've got to make people understand that they're paying the taxes. Every time they say, you know, sock it to the big guy, they're actually paying for it, because that tax is an expense. So if we could get the real issues out and get it out just calmly and say, listen, okay, you don't realize it, but you actually are paying the taxes. That you, every time you want this guy to pay more, the price for everything you buy goes up.
Okay, one thing that I've always said about this, and it goes back to the original thought, is that you have to keep things simple so the average person can understand simplicity. So what you have to do, like you say, every time you go out and pay taxes, take the tax chart, okay, and show it is not just the people that, you know, that are paying $1 million. It's broken down to people at $30,000 and how much extra they're going to pay. Mm-hmm. Somebody at $40,000, how much extra they're going to pay. $50,000 extra going to pay. You need to have a chart to show X amount of money that each individual is going to pay. It is not the wealthy. It is everyone in this country that will pay extra in taxes. Then from there on, you have to take, like here, I'll give you an example, like I am in Chicago today, is that you have to take, first of all, every bottle of water you purchase, you have to pay a 5 cents tax on every bottle of water. If you order a meal, prepared meal at a restaurant, you have to pay taxes. That's pretty much square across the board. But if you order that meal and then you want to take half of it home, you have to pay a 15 cents tax on top of the tax, a meal that you've already prepared, for that doggy bag to take home. So there you're paying an extra tax. Once you start showing all these ridiculous taxes that are in there, people start waking up. I didn't realize I paid that much in taxes. Look at your phone bill. I mean, my God, some of that stuff is, you can't figure it out, tax, tax, tax. I just recently rented a car in where the heck was it, Missouri. And what happened was the taxes were higher than the actual cost of the rental car. Now, you justify that. Mm-hmm. That makes absolutely no sense. I swear to God, God, strike me dead if I'm lying. The taxes were higher than the actual cost of the rental car. Now, that's going way out of line. So this is what you have to start doing, is that you have to start showing each individual person how this does affect you. It is not the super wealthy, because the super wealthy can afford lawyers and tax accountants and everything else to shelter a lot of this money that the average person can't pay. And you know what? They're still paying a tremendous amount of taxes. It's relative, but it's still paying a tremendous amount of taxes.
Absolutely.
You know, I've
got,
which
is how the American Revolution started.
Yeah, I've got a condo here in Chicago, and you know what it's costing me? I'm paying $14,000 a year in taxes for a two-bedroom condo.
You know, since you brought that up, I've got to tell you about a friend of mine who lives in a town called Parkland, right north of my home. He pays $67,000 a year just on property taxes. Okay, so I want you to realize it's not a two bedroom home that he lives in. He lives in a very large home, but $67,000 a year for property taxes. Now, it is absolutely, and if you start looking, bringing that that microscope down and looking around in the physical communities that we live around, I think we go back to going into the churches and the local establishments, and that ought to be the first things out of our mouths. What is around us, not over in Chicago or in California or in New York, but what is around each one of us, and bring those things out. That was so damn shocking to me. It just scared me, you know, that type of robbery is out there, and it's legal.
It's extortion. Yeah. It's what it is.
Yeah. For you exactly. Never own your property. Never own it. And if you think you do, don't pay those taxes one time, and your ass is out of there, and the city owns it.
That's exactly right. And that's my point. You've got to take everything and break it down to the ridiculous so that people clearly understand, because they see a couple pennies here and a couple pennies there. Well, you know what? The old saying goes, pennies make dimes and dimes make dollars. You'd be surprised how much you're actually paying in taxes. And you know what? It is simply, when you get behind, I think it's like 35% that you're paying in taxes to the government, that's servitude.
Exactly.
And we are not living in a servitude society.
Yes.
We broke away from England because of that.
That's right.
That's right. In 1765, during the Stamp Act controversy, John Adams wrote, that the wealth of this country is in the sweat and toil of its citizens. And that, my friend, is where everything comes from. Not the government, not the printing press, but the sweat and toil of its citizens. And if you tax that to death, there's going to be a revolution.
Absolutely.
Well, and you know what? A revolution may not be so bad at this point.
The Brits started taking away economic resources from the original colonies, the U.S. colonies. And when they started taking resources like the best logging material to build their ships and homes and all that kind of thing back in Britain and everything, the colonists just started going up in arms. They were bound by the British rule. And that's how the American Revolution started. They got sick and tired of the Brits telling them, we want your lumber, we want this from you, and we need this much in taxes from you and everything else. And that's how it all started.
Well, you know what, instead of focusing on revolution and if you don't listen, it'll be revolution, I still think we need to not be that involved in trying to make that case. I would rather make the case that here's what you're spending, Joe Blow and Jane Blow. Here's what is happening on a daily basis. This is taking place. Certainly, if it comes down to it and the government grows so humongous that it actually takes over our every second of our personal life, yes, we're going to take what they're trying to take away from us and defend ourselves, which is our guns. And I believe Al brought that up in the very, very beginning. Yes, you have the right to bear arms, and hopefully, end of story. If we go backwards in time, look at what the Japanese did. They didn't bomb us on the West Coast because they knew we had guns over here. What are they? The first thing that they want to get rid of to control us? Of course, we want to talk about those bad, mean old guns. That's what we should get rid of, and it would stop all of the meanness. That's really harsh shit. You know, the reason why we are a free society is we own guns and we have the right to. Quickly, we're coming down to the wire. Anybody want to jump in here?
Go ahead.
Who won the Revolutionary War? America's Revolutionary War.
Who
won the war?
Who won the war?
We don't have time for Q&A.
We've never won the war. Right. We had a recession, if you will, but not winning or losing. It really wasn't. There was groups overseas, the responsible by the English that actually helped us win the war.
Actually, we didn't win the war. We actually had something called the Treaty of Paris, which was a cessation of hostilities. And we still owed England debts. How does a winner owe debts to the Bank of England? It's impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, Alexander Hamilton was a traitor. He formed new banks. He was nothing more than an agent of the Rothschilds.
Love
you know,
everyone.
So what do we do?
Your contributing today was wonderful. We'll see you back here next Thursday.
Dear President Obama, we, the people, have stated resolutely we reject your vision for our country. You claim you have not heard us. We, the people, have assembled across America resisting your efforts to subvert our Constitution and undermine our liberty. You claim you have not seen us. Since you have not acknowledged our message, let us here present it once more. For if, as President Wilson said, a leader's ear must ring with the voices of the people, the time has come. Our greatest treasure is freedom, the absence of restraints on our ability to think and to act. The corollary of freedom is individual responsibility. We believe in the power of the individual. A few years ago, President Bush said, "History moves toward freedom because the desire for freedom is written in every human heart." Let us add that we will preserve it only as long as devotion to freedom is expressed in the heart of our actions. When President Lincoln dedicated Gettysburg National Cemetery, he declared, "It is for us, the living, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus so nobly advanced." That unfinished cause for which our soldiers willingly go to battle and for which so many have given their lives is a free United States of America.